Hi, friends, and welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today we are doing a couple of things. One, we're going to be joined by Dean Jordan Kelman, and we're going to talk about UL, College of Liberal Arts, and, you know, the role of a college in this kind of crazy time. We're also going to be looking to remind you that we are in a fundraising era, and so we want to remind you to make your pledge to KRVS. If you haven't done so, do it during this program, and we'll take it very kindly. During the day, you can call 337-482-5787 or 337-482-KRVS. And, of course, if you're online, you can at any time go to krvs.org and provide some money and get a gift, perhaps, and we'll really appreciate it, and we'll keep public radio on the air. So at this time, we're joined by Dr. Jordan Kelman. He's dean of the College of Liberal Arts at UL Lafayette. He is a Princeton PhD in history, and he's been dean, I think, how long has it been now, Jordan?
8 years.
8 years. Wow, that's quite a while. That's a record for a dean, although not a record at UL, but I mean, that's a significant amount of time to lead a college.
It is.
This is speaking of a particularly interesting time to lead a college, this is a time of unrest in our society, and people are plagued by a lack of civility. And I was just wondering, in an era like this, does the College of Liberal Arts or the university as a whole, or universities, I should say, have a role in trying to do something about this or try to address this crisis in some part?
I think that universities have a huge opportunity to play a central role in our society in fostering the kind of civil discourse that leads to productive conversations and people finding points of commonality and people coming together to solve problems. Not that those things don't happen outside the university as well, but the university, and I would say in particular the College of Liberal Arts at UL, are extremely well situated to foster that kind of dialogue. We have a long tradition in the College of Liberal Arts, like many colleges of liberal arts, of teaching and practicing civil discourse, where we get people with opposing views together to present their arguments and their reasoning for their positions and the evidence that they base those arguments on. That's the kind of exchange that leads to productive moving forward and problem solving. So yes, I think the College of Liberal Arts has a huge role to play today. And I think it's already playing that role in many ways in our community.
Well, I want to hear more about that, but I'm thinking, now you said political connectedness, and you mentioned diverse voices and things like that. And I was thinking, you know, sometimes the critique of the colleges and universities is that they're a think tank for liberal ideas. How would you respond if someone said, oh, well, you guys, sure, you can come together because you're all on the same page?
Well, I would first invite somebody who said that to come and meet some of our conservative faculty, of which we have many. We teach a broad spectrum of ideas and approaches at the university. For the most part, our courses do not have a particular ideological slant. And we have faculty and students from everywhere on the political and cultural spectrum. And in fact, the kind of civil discourse that I was describing is the only way that we're able to continue with the learning process with such a diversity of views. So I, too, have heard that characterization of universities in general. But it's not something I see within our halls and within our classrooms. And anybody who thinks that, again, I would invite them to come and sit in on some of our courses and see the very, very open, open-minded and open to all people and points of view discussions that take place in our classrooms, in our hallways, in the colloquia that we put on.
One of the things that I think, and perhaps you'll agree with me on this, is that people forget that people who teach at UL and who are part of UL are also part of the community here. Many times the faculty are from around here. The people we teach are from around here. So it's not like this is some sort of liberal bastion completely removed from Lafayette or Louisiana or the South. In fact, it's deeply enmeshed in all that. So the sense that the university is a little bit different or in that regard. You know, my wife is always responding to people on her feed who say that, oh, well, you know, the teachers are promoting Marxist doctrines and, you know, hidden census her because she says, I don't know any Marxists. And frankly, everybody who's teaching, particularly in public school around here, at least, is from here. So how
That's
many
right.
Marxists do you know?
That's right. And I would take it a step further and say that UL has an especially strong relationship with the community that it is in. And I think many people in Lafayette take that for granted, that the university is in constant communication and collaboration with the community. We do lots and lots of things together. The people who make up the university, as you point out, are very largely from the community here or have strong connections to the community here. Many, many universities do not have this relationship with the towns in which they find themselves. And the town, what's often referred to as town gown hostility, which characterizes many universities across the country, you just don't really find it here. And I think part of the reason for that is that there is a love and a respect for the community and its values at UL, and there's a love and respect and appreciation for the university within Lafayette and Acadiana. Now, that doesn't mean that their interests and perspectives of individual faculty member and every cultural and historical element of the community are always aligned, of course. But once again, the basis for civil discourse is not that everybody agrees 100% on everything. It's that they agree to work together towards common goals. And I feel that that has always characterized the relationship between Lafayette and its community. And I think that, frankly, that the caricature that you mentioned of the view that sometimes is put out about universities and their faculty and their perspective, not only does it not really apply to UL, but I don't think it applies to the community's view of UL either. I think that overall we have a very positive mutual relationship between the university and the community.
If you just tuned in, we're talking to Dean Jordan Kelman of the College of Liberal Arts. And we are also trying to raise some money, so please remember to make your pledge to KRVS. Please call 482-5787 or online krvs.org. Dean, let's talk a little bit. You're the head of the largest, most diverse college at UL. How has the college responded to the COVID crisis, the crisis that brought on by coronavirus? What effect has it actually had on the delivery of teaching and service and on scholarship?
So At UL, we came up over the summer with a strategy to try to preserve as much of the learning process as we could for the fall semester, and the similar models will be in place for the spring, while still maintaining safety for our students and our faculty. We were very, very concerned that the environment of normal operations for a university was one that if the proper precautions and safety measures were not taken, would be one that is extremely conducive to spreading coronavirus. As you know, students meet together in large numbers for academic purposes in classes and passing through buildings, and they get together in all other kinds of ways across the campus experience as well. So we spent a lot of time thinking about how to restructure those interactions in order to make them safe. And one of the pieces of that puzzle that we came up with, which was an administrative innovation here, was a new course type called HyFlex, which we had never had before, which essentially created a flexible format that would allow the instructor to change the meeting modality of the course depending on the circumstances. So it would allow students and faculty to meet virtually while the pandemic was still a very severe concern, but to come together under controlled circumstances when the course content required that or when there were special opportunities, learning opportunities, and exchanges, and also times when it would be necessary, such as for exams. And then the hope was that as we worked through the pandemic and conditions improved, that we would be able to bring those classes back to campus without altering, making administrative alterations. So it's really a flexible course category. And the college prepared a slate of course offerings that was pretty balanced across the different modalities for offering classes. We offered roughly 20% face-to-face courses, another good chunk of hybrid, actually technically hybrid and online courses, then a large number of remote classes and HyFlex classes. About 40% of the offerings came out to be HyFlex classes. To do the face-to-face classes, like everywhere else, we social distanced our classrooms. It was a fairly long planning process to figure out what all the requirements would be, and then a pretty grueling physical process to do it. And it was actually academic faculty and administration in the College of Liberal Arts who went into the classrooms and removed a bunch of seats and placed everything so that students and faculty could interact safely.
And as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, the classroom has not been the locus of any transmission at UL.
We don't know of any cases of COVID being transmitted in a classroom setting or an academic building setting. A testament, I think, to that planning process that I just described in preparation, and also to our students and faculty and staff who've been very diligent in following the rules and pitching in to do what needs to be done to keep as many people safe as possible.
And I think that's a testament to the work that there haven't been, because we've seen outbreaks at other colleges all over the country, you know, at various times. And colleges are almost by definition congregant settings, bringing lots of people together, and that's their strength. And, of course, that poses a challenge in a COVID era. So let's talk about some things that are coming up from the college. I understand that it's going to be the 100th anniversary of the College of Liberal Arts.
That's right. The College of Liberal Arts was the first college founded at UL Lafayette, which was SLII at the time. It was created in 1921 and included at the time both the sciences, liberal arts, what we now think of as liberal arts, so the humanities and social sciences. That's what makes up the College of Liberal Arts now. Also included the sciences and the arts. So it was an even bigger college back then in terms of the disciplines under its umbrella. Eventually, the sciences created their own college, and the College of the Arts peeled off as a separate entity. So now the College of Liberal Arts is social sciences and humanities, but we're incredibly excited about this opportunity to celebrate 100 years of amazing accomplishments and playing an amazing role in the lives of hundreds of thousands of students who've now gone on to do amazing things.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to tell exactly how many people have been influenced by the College of Liberal Arts over the years, but it's certainly got to be a huge number. You know, I thought maybe you would talk a little bit. Why is it called a Liberal Arts, College of Liberal Arts?
So this has nothing to do with the word liberal as it's used in a political setting, but refers to a broad vision of the possibilities of what education is and can be. So it's liberal in the sense of a broad set of ideas and topics that are meant to expand people's minds.
Interesting. Now, is this kind of an Enlightenment sort of model or something that arose out of the Enlightenment?
It is, and it's actually a vision of education that stems originally from the Renaissance, that started being employed in the 15th, 16th, 17th century, built out of the core curriculum of the university, which was created in Europe in the 11th century. And those ideas were created by Renaissance thinkers who were thinking about what young people needed in the world to be successful, what they needed in the world to be good citizens. But they were also thinking about classical models, like all Renaissance thinkers did. They were thinking about classical models of education and ideas about the purpose of learning. So they read Plato, they thought about Plato's Academy, they thought about the role of Socrates in Athens and the kinds of things that he taught, and they took those ideas and applied them to the world, the burgeoning world of Renaissance Europe, with its growing middle class and new urban centers where people were becoming successful very quickly, and the idea of an education as something that could bring you into a successful world. It wasn't just something you had to inherit from previous generations. Was part of what was behind the idea of a liberal education.
It's an amazing project, and it's certainly been a success. And that's one reason why, you know, the Western industrialized nations have been such groundbreakers ever since, you know, as you say, the 15th, 16th century. Let's talk about recently, you know, the Kathleen Babineau Blanco Center for Public Policy opened. And I wonder if you could bring us up to date a little bit on that center. And maybe I would imagine most people know about it now, but maybe some don't.
Yes, so the Blanco Center was based on an endowment and the idea of our late former governor, Kathleen Babineau Blanco, who really set out in the last 2 years of her life to gather all of the resources and connections that she had accumulated from a lifetime of public service in Louisiana and deploy those to create a research center that would help to solve the most pressing problems facing the state of Louisiana today. And that was the original idea for the Blanco Center, and I'm delighted to say that after almost a year and a half since it opened, it is already extremely successful in accomplishing those goals that the former governor had for it. And it's already been a major benefit to policymakers and through them to the people of Louisiana and beyond. Our center director is Stephen Barnes. He's an economist, a very well-known economist in the state. He serves on the Revenue Estimating Committee's Economic Advisory Panel. He's very involved in economic research for various projects in the state. He's won a number of grants recently to use the Blanco Center's resources to help solve particular problems. So the Blanco Center was involved early on in the pandemic and collaborated with faculty in our economics department help gather data and make projections and on the spread of COVID. And that data was used very intensively by our state government to drive policy and is probably partially responsible for keeping us what we are right now, which is one of the lowest rates of COVID spread in our region. The Blanco Center has also recently gotten involved in coastal issues, coastal erosion, and tracking and quantifying our coastline and its land loss and comparing the different solutions to that problem. It's an enormous issue and one that requires tremendous amounts of data and analysis from different disciplines, and it's the kind of thing that the Blanco Center is perfectly positioned to undertake.
We are talking today with Dean Jordan Kelman of the College of Liberal Arts, and we certainly welcome the show. We're also here to remind you that this is a great time to make a pledge to KRVS if you like programming like this that's focused on information about making people aware, then please, by all means, contribute. If you get a chance, you can call right now, 482-5787, and donate whatever amount. We would certainly love to have it. We'd love to have your support if you think about what KRVS does for the community and what a great part of the community it is. You will certainly realize that your contribution is well spent. Now, the Center for Louisiana Studies is also housed in the College of Liberal Arts.
That's right.
And there are a number of projects going on there. There's a busy team of researchers working in all kinds of areas. But they're also trying to get something going called the Roy House. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So everybody in Lafayette knows the Roy House, even if they don't know the name. It's the big white Victorian on the corner of Johnston and University. And many people think of it as the gateway to the university, because as you're coming down either of those two streets from the interstate, for example, or from other communities in Acadiana, it's the first big building that you see that signals that you're on UL's campus. And that building has been identified as the future location for the Center for Louisiana Studies for a number of years. It is in need of renovation, both outside and inside, and under two directors, Michael Martin, who was the director of the center for many years, and now Josh Caffrey, who's been director for several years, a big fundraising campaign has been underway to gather the funds to properly restore the Roy House, both so the center can move into it and make it its base of operations, and to preserve the beauty of the Roy House for future generations. It's an amazing house, both inside and out. It's got incredible architectural details inside. It's been the subject of an in-depth architectural history study. It's on the National Historic Register. It's a wonderful house, and it's had a few modifications over the years, but they've been pretty superficial, and most of the original detail is still in there and kind of waiting to be brought back to life. Now, the location of the house is important, too, because not only does it sort of serve as a gateway to the university as you're coming in from somewhere else, but it's also really occupies a critical spot as a connector between the university and downtown. And as you know, we do a lot of collaborative projects with the Lafayette community, and downtown Lafayette is undergoing a great renaissance, and we're developing all kinds of activities and different kinds of programming and experiences that are open to people in Lafayette downtown. The university and the downtown are actually only a couple of blocks away from each other, but ironically, they have been thought of over the years as being much farther than that, partly because it's difficult to walk from one to the other because of the traffic there. But the part of the potential of the Roy House, especially when it becomes the Center for Louisiana Studies, is to really serve as a connection between the campus of UL and downtown. And they have wonderful ideas about the ways the house is going to be open to the public. It's going to be the center for the UL Press, which is under the Center for Louisiana Studies. So you'd be able to stop in and see all the books that the press is publishing and buy them. It can serve the function of welcoming people to campus, giving maps and directions and guiding people. And they even have in mind some kind of a series of events on the porch, on the splendid, huge Victorian porch, which might involve acoustic concerts and other kinds of events that welcome people from campus and from the greater community. So it's a huge opportunity, really, to open up UL in a way that it hasn't been before. And the fundraising has been extremely successful. They still need more, so get in touch with the center. You can easily find them through their website. Just search for Center for Louisiana Studies on UL's website. They actually secured a very competitive and prestigious grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities to match contributions from UL community members to fix up the Roy House. So you can multiply your investment in the future of the Roy House by giving now, and the National Endowment for Humanities will match your contribution.
Wow, that's pretty great. Well, listen, speaking of multiplying your investment, we would encourage you to make an investment in KRVS. This is the fundraiser, so this is the time. We've been talking today to the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts, Dr. Jordan Kelman. Thanks so much for joining the show.
Thank you, Pearson. It's been a pleasure.
The use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Hello, this is Julian Primo. I support KRVS because of the exclusive and original content that is provided daily and weekly, such programs as the Medicine Ball Caravan and the Blues Box. Please join me in supporting KRVS Public Radio.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, listener-supported public radio for Acadiana. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.